Welcome to Dragon Football Weekly. Tucker Green with Jess Walker with all your coverage of Pickens football this season, brought to you by Tri-State Communications Sports Network. Good to be back with everybody after 2 weeks off for me. Two Fridays ago, of course, I had to miss the region opener against Lumpkin for work, but y'all are in good hands. Jess slid over to the play-by-play chair, and Stephen Hunter, former Pickens coach, filled in on color commentary, so want to thank them for filling in my absence. And then, of course, the Dragons coming off of a bye week, their second bye week of the season this year. And that's something I want to start off with, Jess. That's something that's kind of made me curious. Have we always had two bye weeks? I know we did last year. I know that's not new from last year, but has it always been new? I found it kind of interesting, the Dragons having two bye weeks and kind of basically in the first half of the season, both of them coming in.
So I don't know about always. As long as we've been doing this, I think we have. And what it is you get the one non-region, which of course has to be like in the first 4 weeks of the season, and then every week in the region schedule a team gets a bye week. We just kind of got an unfortunate draw of having the second week of region play. We were off. I mean, like White County had the very first week off, and then there will be somebody that has the very last week off. So it just kind of wherever you fall on the draw there, and Pickens just is early. So we kind of get two bye weeks sandwiched together almost.
That makes sense, the non-region part of the schedule and the region portion. Speaking of that, as I noted, Dragons started off region play 2 weeks ago at home against Lumpkin. I unfortunately was not there, but I heard I didn't miss a whole lot, Jess.
Yeah, it wasn't the way we wanted to start our region schedule. However, I do think that a loss was I don't feel like appropriate is necessarily the word. That a loss, we were outmatched. We played a better team. We played what I feel like is the best team in the region. When I feel like come November we'll be the number one seed. So. Like I said, I don't know that appropriate is the word to use there, but a loss was, you know, they faced a tougher opponent and it showed on the field. Lumpkin dominated from start to finish. I'll just kind of quickly recap. It's been 2 weeks and I know you weren't present, so I'll just kind of take over this portion. From start to finish, Lumpkin led the way behind incredible quarterback Cal Faulkner. They also have a standout running back, Mason Sullins, and it was clear that they won the battle of the trenches on both ends, but especially their offensive line, paving the way for Sullins all night long. He had no trouble running the ball, ran for almost 200 yards, picked up three touchdowns as well. He's now gone over 1,000 yards for the season after their game last week versus Westland. So at this point in the season, that's an incredible total already. So we faced a tougher team and it showed. Finished up 49-14. You would have liked to be able to play that game a little bit closer, if anything. Last year it's nearly an identical score. I know we've talked about that's been a theme so far, as the mirror image almost of last year's results to this year. 42-47 at Lumpkin last year. This year, 49-14. Each team picked up an extra touchdown. So similar results to 2022. On the Pickens end of thing, another bright spot for us was McCord Purdy once again putting up two receiving touchdowns, both of course from quarterback Sam Stryker. But the sophomore Purdy continues to have an impressive season. If there was some optimism to take away from that, I would highlight him as a key player for us in that game.
Of course, Dragons going to look to bounce back this Friday and week two for them, week three overall region contest, but week two of region competition for them at home against Dawson. We'll, of course, have coverage of that for you Friday night, and we'll talk about that a little later on in the program. Want to just kind of quickly, now that we have had a couple weeks under the belt, what are things looking around the region?
So, yeah, even though we were off last week, the six other teams, of course, were in action. The highlight of the week, almost I would say maybe the game of the entire region schedule, was Lumpkin versus Westland. Really wanted to see how that shook out, and I think I said going into it that I thought the winner of that game, potentially the region champion. As you now know, Lumpkin picked up the win 30-21 versus Westland. I think that's a huge win in terms of future playoff seeding. Not saying that Lumpkin couldn't pick up a loss somewhere, but I think it will be kind of smooth sailing for them here on out. So huge win over Wesleyan, 30-21 by Lumpkin. That'll put Wesleyan at 1-1. They did pick up a win over Gilmer week one. We haven't got to talk since week one of region play. Another game in action last week that I think has implications, playoff implications, as well as seeding applications, White versus Dawson. White picked up the win there. That's their first region game of the season. They had the bye week one. Dawson now 1-1 on the region schedule. They picked up the win against West Hall week one. Then the third and final matchup from last week, Gilmer put it on West Hall 35-6. So you can kind of play out the standings in your head now based on what I just said. We will save that for after our interview to run through who stands where 2 weeks into region play. I do think that a couple of those matchups that took place last week, Lumpkin and Wesleyan and White and Dawson, really give us a good picture on how things are going to shake out. But of course, it is early, and we know, you know, at this point last year, we kind of had a very different idea, especially from the Dragons' standpoint of how things were going to end up. So you never know what's the case is going to be until November. But I do think that last week told the story about a couple teams.
Great point. A lot of football still left to be played, and be interesting to see how everything pans out Wrap the rest of this season and what the top four teams will end up being in this region. You teased a little about interview coming up this week. We're very excited to have a special guest with us that we think can give a lot of insight to the fans out there about a different side of football game, a different perspective on Friday nights. And that's when we're going to be joined on the other side of this break by Greg Norton. He is a GHSA official, longtime official across multiple sports, and you'll hear a little more about his background and some of his viewpoints from the officiating side of things on Friday nights. So stay with us. You don't want to miss this interview on the other side of Dragon Football Weekly.
With Northside Hospital, you can look forward to new beginnings, look ahead to comeback seasons, and look up for hope and strength. Northside welcomes you into our community of care, guided by one clear direction, a mission to heal. Led by our expertise in maternity, heart, cancer, orthopedics, and more, you can move into tomorrow with confidence. For a healthier future together, look to Northside Hospital.
Feed all the hungry people in your family at Culver's of Jasper. Their signature butter burgers are fresh, never frozen, and the frozen custard is the perfect treat. Culver's of Jasper is locally owned and operated by local people who care about our community. Their passion for fresh food is as strong as their love for the community. They're proud of where they're located and how their local roots have made them who they are. Get fresh food now at Culver's of Jasper, just in front of Walmart.
Finding the right home for your family is important. The journey can be time-consuming and difficult. You want the right size, the perfect location, and great internet. ETC makes it easy to see what internet services you can get for your future or current home. Visit etcfiber.com, enter your address, and get an overview of all available services with pricing. No more internet surprises. Check before you buy. Make sure your home is right for you with ETC Ignite Internet, offering speeds up to 2.5 gigs. Call 844-708-5288 or visit etcfiber.com.
Back now on Dragon Football Weekly, Jess and I are excited to be joined by Greg Norton, the GHSA official. Greg, appreciate you coming on the show.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Greg, tell us a little. I know I've been seeing you around differing leagues, differing sports for years, just through my involvement with athletics. And I know you and Jess have actually had the opportunity to work some together officiating-wise. But tell us a little bit for the listeners out there, your officiating background, how long you've been officiating, which sports you officiate, your association that you're involved with, and things of that nature.
Sure. I have been officiating Georgia high school basketball and football for 35, 36 years. I started out doing softball and baseball, and I figured out I didn't really like that very much, because you're either burning up or freezing to death. There's no clock, and fans are right on top of you. I just didn't enjoy that very much at all. But then I did basketball. I've done basketball, and then I've been doing football for about 30 years. And so, I'm a graduate of Fanning County High School, which I'm sure a lot of the, Dragon Nation people know that. But when you become an official, you're no longer a fan. You're always just an official. And so, but I currently live between Blue Ridge and LJ, and, been refereeing in the North Georgia area for a long time. I really enjoy officiating. Once somebody starts officiating and it catches you, you're caught. And, I've officiated out of Cartersville, Georgia, the Etowah Valley Football Officials Association. In football, our association covers the Pickens high school games, and in basketball, I referee out of Gainesville, the Georgia Mountain Officials Association, and I just really enjoy officiating football and basketball. And so, you know, the fall and the winter time of the year for me are very busy. I've also been fortunate enough to referee some college women's basketball at NCAA level, and that's been something that I have really enjoyed. And so I enjoy officiating. I love it. I love giving back to the game. And even though sometimes it can be a challenge, you know, with fans and even coaches, I think through the years, I'd have to say it's been a very positive experience for me.
That's neat. And your extensive experience shows, I mean, from my vantage point, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe I don't know what the term would be, but you're almost a trainer, mentor now of officials and helping get new officials, you know, prepared to go into the differing levels of both sports and things of that nature. I think that's accurate about you. And I know for football, you're primarily, if not always, the white hat head of the officiating crew. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. For the last 10 or 15 years, I guess, I have primarily on Friday nights been a white hat. Of course, the white hat has a little bit more responsibility. He's leading the crew, and he's also the primary point of contact and the communication person, you know, with coaches and fans and media as we give our signals. And so I have been fortunate enough to be able to do that, and I enjoy that. I am on the Georgia High School State Training Committee. I actually train all of the white hats, the referees across the state. I've been doing that for several years, and I really enjoy that. And one of the things that I do, a lot of the people, probably a lot of your younger fans with kids growing up, I have a group called the North Georgia Youth Officials Association, and we provide officials for the Mountain Football Conference, which Pickens plays in, Gilmer Fannin, and I have probably 60 to 80 officials that referee for me on Saturdays. And so I am trying to grow the officiating community. The average age football official in the state of Georgia is 58. And there are a lot of us that are at that age or beyond that, you know, we really need to, it's probably getting time for us to be looking at when we come off the field, and we need to do our part to try to get, more people involved in officiating. That's one of the things that I'm passionate about, is trying to get, younger people, players, former players who may or may not have the opportunity to play at the next level, but if they want to stay close to the game of football, officiating football and basketball are absolutely great experiences most of the time. So that is just another hat that I carry that I do to try to continue to make the officiating community grow in the state of Georgia, and particularly in our area in North Georgia. So.
And I can kind of speak to that personally. I do. I would say that, of course, I'm only on the basketball side of things, of course, wearing the broadcast journalistic hat for football. But I would say I'm definitely on the younger side of the officiating profession for most folks. And I kind of want to do this at the end, both of us, but I can, you know, I would give it a positive endorsement. It is a great side gig for anybody that's got the time and the passion. But I do kind of have that penciled in for us towards the end of the interview. One thing I wanted to have you give the listeners insight on, Greg, is what a typical game day routine is like, and how much you prepare for these games, and then maybe even we'll jump into how preparation differs on a standard Friday night versus maybe some of the bigger games you've officiated.
Well, so, you know, I think a lot of people have a misconception that, you know, referees just show up on Fridays and get out of their cars and change their clothes and go out on the field and referee. And that is definitely a myth. There is a lot of time commitment involved in officiating, regardless of which sport you're doing. You know, we have been training officials since June for football. My crew, we've had probably 5 or 6 or maybe 7 crew meetings during the summer leading up to the season. Sometimes we'd meet in person, sometimes we'd meet on Zoom. We have some association meetings that we attend for training. We have a lot of requirements that we have to do for Georgia High School in order to be able to be an approved Georgia High School official. You know, and so for me, a typical week, you know, we get our assignments in football about a week ahead of time or a week ahead of time. And so for me, the first thing that we're engaged to do is we email and reach out to the schools in which we're going. So if we're going to Pickens and they're playing Gilmer, then we're going to engage, you know, the athletic director and the head football coach with an email just sharing who's coming to the game and what time we'll be arriving. Typically we arrive, you know, at the game site a couple hours beforehand and go through our pregame routine. And so that would be the first thing that I would do. That usually happens on a Monday for me. And then on Monday evening or Tuesday morning, you know, I'll send an email to my crew that I'm going to be working with. Most of the time for me, I have the same people that are on my crew, which is a real benefit. We go through a fairly extensive little pregame that we do. I give assignments each week. We talk about our previous games and some of the plays that we learn from. We review our game films from the previous week every week, and we have a penalty chart that we fill out for all of our games. And as a requirement on my crew, we always go back and we look at our fouls to determine, you know, if they were accurate, if we missed fouls, all of those kinds of things. And so a typical week for us is, you know, we get to the field at 5:30 on Friday, but there's a lot of work that we've done beforehand. And then the pinnacle of that is walking out on the field 45 minutes before the kickoff and then working the game. And then after the game, you know, the next couple of days reviewing the game film and, you know, kind of being our own worst critic and looking at our game and seeing how we did for both from a game management perspective, from a mechanics perspective, and just overall in general how we feel like we did. So it's not just show up, get out of the car, walk out, and referee a game, especially on a Friday night. Most JV games and youth leagues, they're not quite as intense as that, but we do have a requirement about when people get there. And we usually try to have a little bit of a conversation before those games, but nothing as extensive as a Friday night football game or a varsity football game for the Georgia High School.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a little nugget into you know, what goes into it. And of course, I watch film when I get the opportunity to with basketball, but even, you know, what you just explained is a little bit more extensive even than what I've been exposed to. And I think a lot of people will be happy to hear that just because there is so much of a negative kind of stigma with, you know, officials are almost, you know, it's their first assumption is they're wrong from the majority of people. There are people who understand it a little bit better than some, but it is always so, you know, people want to assume they're wrong. And even if you do a great job, it's almost like, you know, you want to walk out of there. I think you'll agree with this with nobody remembering who you are and things like that. That's kind of one of the things we talk about. So, Tucker, I think if you want, we will we'll toss it to our first commercial break and then come back and ask Greg a little bit about some state playoff experience, maybe some rule differences, and we'll do that little pitch to new officials there before we sign off.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this conversation a lot, so I'm excited to continue it on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
Piedmont Mountainside Hospital has been a leader of quality medical care in Georgia with 16 consecutive A hospital safety grades Leapfrog Group and consistently ranking in the top 5 Atlanta hospitals in patient excellence. Piedmont offers a wide range of services and specialties, including imaging, cardiac rehabilitation, and general surgery to meet the acute and long-term needs of the community. In addition, Piedmont Mountainside offers 24-hour emergency and intensive care in Jasper and in LJ. Choose Piedmont Mountainside. Real change lives here.
The word community means everything to the people of Community Bank of Pickens County. Community is much more than a name to the owners and staff. They're proud to be the area's only locally owned and operated bank and have a staff that lives in our area. They've continued to offer in-person service at both of their full-service locations while also offering you the latest online banking technology. Community Bank of Pickens County, saying go Dragons during this football season. Member FDIC.
My dad has always told me, if you want something done right, sometimes that means you just have to do it yourself.
That's right. Dan Jape here with my son, Daniel, excited to share that we're doing it right again.
Introducing Jape Services.
We're the same family that has served Atlanta with reliable heating, cooling, and plumbing services for over 5 decades.
Our professionals at Jape Services are licensed, insured, and ready to assist.
And we're doing it right.
Visit japeservices.com.
From our family
to yours,
japeservices.com.
The Pickens County Recycling Centers are open to serve all residents of Pickens County. They offer free paper shredding and free collections of typical recyclable items such as glass, cardboard, and newspaper. You can also recycle large items such as appliances and mattresses for a small fee. The main recycling center is located at 390 Appalachian Court off the 515, or visit the east side location on Cove Road in Marble Hill. The goal of the Pickens County Recycling Center is to reduce waste to our landfills.
Still here with Greg Norton on Dragon Football Weekly, GHSA official, getting some insight from him. And Greg, I've really enjoyed the conversation so far, and I'm learning some stuff myself. One of the things you talked about was the prep that goes into these games, and we talked about an ordinary Friday night. But I'm also curious about some of this postseason action. I know you had the opportunity to coach some big games officiate some big games. What are the biggest games you've had the opportunity to be a part of, and how does that – I would imagine even more work and preparation goes into officiating a game of that magnitude than a regular Friday night. How does that kind of differ?
Yeah. Well, you know, I have been fortunate enough to work some state playoff games, you know, through the years. I've been fortunate enough to referee 3 state championships in football. And the preparation for those games is not really any different, you know, than a regular season game. The same amount of commitment and time is put into it. Obviously, the stakes are a little bit more, you know. Well, one team's going to go home and one team's going to get to continue to live the dream of possibly, you know, making it to a state championship. And that holds true for the referees as well. In football specifically, the crews are evaluated every week, you know, from their playoff games, and based on their evaluation and how they're scored, depends upon whether or not you're able to move on. And so for us, it's just as much it's as stressful for us, you know, to go out, because we want to give our best to the game and to the student athletes. But we also, you know, want to do our best so that we can potentially make it to our final destination, which would be a state championship as well. And so we put a lot of time and effort and preparation. We spend time trying to learn some information about our teams, so that we can put ourselves in the best position possible with our mechanics to be able to do that. And as far as some of the bigger games that I have officiated, you know, our state championship game last year was Gainesville and Langston Hughes. It was an amazing game. It was a very tough game. It was awesome and really a great experience, you know, at the Century Pack Stadium there in Atlanta. But I never really understood why I would hear a lot of the coaches talk about, you know, how that they wish that the state championship games were brought back to their home stadiums. Probably one of the most electric and exciting games that I have ever been a part of was my semifinal game last year, the Battle of the Red Devils, Bowdoin versus Lincoln County. And literally that little town of Bowdoin would kind of remind you of Jasper or LJ or Blue Ridge, a little smaller. But, I mean, the whole town was shut down. The city, the game was electric. People were right on top of you. It was just an amazing game, an amazing experience. And that was so, so much fun. And so, and then for us, whether or not we didn't know whether or not we would move on. But we were fortunate enough to have done a good enough job to be able to, and then to get the assignment of the Gainesville Langston Hughes game, was an amazing experience as well. So, those are some of the, you know, anytime you do a playoff game, you know, they just feel different. You know, we've done several of those and had some really good games and some tough situations going places you've never been before. That has really been exciting. But probably the biggest game that I've worked this year was the opening game of the season, which was Carrollton and Langston Hughes at Carrollton. It was the ESPN, one of the ESPN games of the week. And that was truly amazing to see, you know, to witness athletes, you know, 7 or 8 5-star athletes, major, you know, major college recruits who've already made decisions. To say it's a little different than refereeing some of the talent that we see up in the North Georgia area, it is a little different. It's just not that those, it's just you have more quality athletes and it's faster. But those are just some of the highlights of my career just recently from a football official's perspective, and they have been wonderful.
Yeah, that sounds like some incredible environments to be a part of, no doubt about it. Now, I know that a few times this season, kind of pivoting a little more to the actual rules of the game that y'all enforce on Friday nights, there's been a few times Jess and I on air have been talking about some of the rules and how things can differ from other levels of the game. And Jess, I know you had some in particular you wanted to talk about with Greg that maybe he can not only give us a little insight, but also the fans out there, because probably if we're thinking it and talking about it on air, I'm sure there are fans in the stands that maybe you're curious about why a call goes the way it does, or why penalty enforcement or whatever it may be on a call differs from what they're used to seeing on their TV or what may have you.
Yeah, and two of the ones in particular, I think, that we just wanted clarification on. We talked to you a little bit about this before we went live. I think I have this one right finally, but it confused me so many times early on in our broadcast career, is intentional grounding. So NFL and college, I believe, and I'm not going to ask you to clarify this, my interpretation of that rule is you're outside the tackle box. You don't have to target a receiver. You can throw it out of bounds as long as it gets the line of scrimmage. Don't believe that's the case in the high school, but I want to say you talked like that may have changed recently.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, the National Federation changed that rule for high school sports across the nation. And the rule simply stated that as long as the quarterback got outside the tackle box, which would be outside the tackles, then they would be able to throw the ball away, line of scrimmage extended, even out of bounds, as long as the ball went beyond the line of scrimmage. And so, you know, in previous years, you would always hear, you know, fans and coaches and, you know, yelling, yeah, they're outside the tackle box. Well, you know, that's not our rule. You know, the other thing that we hear a lot of as it relates to that is that, you know, in high school, in college, I think they have the uncatchable. You know, if it was uncatchable, then you can't have pass interference or anything like that. Well, high school doesn't have that rule. If a player gets waylaid, and even though it's an uncatchable ball, technically it's still a foul, you know. So this year they added to that rule a little bit as far as the intentional grounding goes, is that the only person that can intentionally ground the football is the quarterback. You know, coaches are pretty good, it's pretty smart at trying to figure out ways to circumvent the rules. And so last year we saw where that the quarterback would catch the ball, you know, take a snap in the shotgun, and then he would do a backward pass to a receiver. And then the receiver may or may not be able to find anybody to throw the ball to, and then they would intentionally ground the ball. Well, last year that was legal. This year it only applies to the person that takes the snap, and it must be a clean snap. So definitely that is a rule change that officials were happy to see, because it is more in line with the college and the NFL rule, and a lot of times people do get confused on the differences between those rules.
Yeah, that's one that I've heard a lot, and we actually will, since we had the conversation off air, Tucker and I'll, we will either clarify a few of those in the closing of this show or maybe even in the pregame show Friday night. That's be something good to add. There are a lot of them. We don't really have time to go over all of them. I know one thing that I did want to get, and you kind of alluded to it a little bit in that, is we talked about fans misunderstanding, and I think it's more of not always just a misunderstanding of the rules or just general, you know, misconception of what yourself and, you know, even on the basketball floor, myself, are out there to do. And kind of, I just want to talk about that. Like I said, I kind of want to give a pitch to aspiring officials. They've seen some of the other side of it from this interview, and kind of like a message, you know, to fans and that sort of thing as well surrounding officiating.
Yeah. You know, I think that probably one of the most frustrating things for officials, especially new officials, and when you're trying to recruit new officials and get new officials started, most of them start out working the lower level games. You know, when you're working a high school football game, a varsity game, or a basketball, there's usually a lot of fans there, and you usually can't pick up on certain an individual or one person, you know, really berating an official. You really can't hone in on that. But when you're working a lower level game and you've got fans yelling at officials, berating officials, that doesn't speak well to us being able to try to recruit and retain officials. Every sports event that I go to, that I referee, there is a sportsmanship statement that is read before every game. Matter of fact, it is mandatory in the GHSA, and it is very clear as to what is acceptable and what is not. And I think it's just in one ear and out the other for most of the time, because I think a lot of people think that if they pay their money, they can go in, they can yell and scream and do whatever they want to. And I think if they really realize that there's a respect that needs to be there for officials, it would really change the whole dynamics of people who wanted to do this. You know, it's okay to get upset and yell about a call, but, you know, or have an emotional experience, you know, about it. But when you're berating an official and you're making it personal, and, you know, you're using words that really come against their own character, that is just not good. And people don't want to be a part of anything like that. And that's what really hurts, you know, us from a perspective of being able to get in new people and to grow the officiating community, which is needed. There is still an official shortage in every sport. That is why sometimes games have to be moved to Thursday or Saturday. And it is simply because people don't want to do it because of the behaviors that they experience from fans specifically at these games. And it's generally at the lower levels more so than it is at the high school level.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. You know, coming from, I am okay with passion as an official. In fact, I encourage passion. I would rather, I know we're directing this mostly at fans, but, you know, I would rather have a coach that's on me respectfully than one that doesn't, that's quiet as a mouse the whole time. I think that shows that they're a little bit more engaged. And I even joined that from fans. I don't like being in a gym that's quiet. You know, I don't like being in a dead gym. It's much more entertaining when the fans are into the game. You know, where that becomes a problem is when, you know, the respectfulness lines cross. And I definitely don't think you were using this medium to, you know, say get off our backs type thing either. This is certainly not a airing out complaints, but I think that officiating is, you know, we're out there doing a job, and in no other profession would you have an outsider you know, show up at your profession and criticize what you're doing. It just wouldn't be acceptable. And you know, that's a comparison I hear used a lot, and I think it's a good one. Now, like I said, I enjoy passionate coaches. I enjoy passionate fans, but there is a line of respect, especially like you talked about with younger officials. I've seen it firsthand. I won't name the time or the place, but I was working with a very green teenage, maybe early 20s girl trying to get into officiating basketball. And she is no longer going to explore that because of the experience she had with an unruly fan. And it's upsetting because, you know, she enjoyed it. She had a lot of promise, in my opinion. And I hated to see that happen firsthand. And if that decreased, then I think a lot more people would be interested in it. I think that is, you know, one of the downsides is how well you deal with that. Other than that, you know, it's great people. You and I are living proof of that. Great relationship that has fostered from officiating. Great people to be around. If you enjoy sporting events and you want to stay in it beyond your high school, or if you have the privilege to play college, that's a great way to do it. It's a great side job. If you have the time, there is very few other, you know, part-time gigs that you can make that sort of hourly rate, and the relationships that you build are just incredible. I would recommend it to anybody, and I think you would too.
Yeah, and I just would finish with this, you know, Jess, and just say that certainly I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys. As an official, you know, I don't have favorite teams, but I'll be on very honest in saying it makes me feel good when I see, you know, my teams and the 515, the Pickens, the Gilmers, and the Fannins, and even Union. When I see those teams do well, it makes me feel good. Silently and behind the scenes, I'm always pulling for those teams. So thank you for the opportunity for me to be able to share. And certainly, I don't want anybody to take away from here that, you know, I'm giving a negative connotation towards fans or anything like that. I just want us to be able to continue to play these games, and I want there to be people to be able to do it whenever I'm not able to officiate anymore. And the way that we do that is by making it a positive experience. And I have a hashtag that I use quite regularly. It's called Respect the Stripes. And I think that, you know, I just would want to leave today with the simple fact that as a fan, if you're listening today and you've been one of those fans that's been unruly and been ugly towards fans, just take a deep breath. And I don't think any time I've ever seen that make the situation better in my 35 years of officiating. I don't think it's ever made a situation better. Just take a deep breath. Be thankful for those referees and the opportunity to be able to play. And let's try to see if we can't do things that will promote better behavior so that we can grow this officiating community.
Absolutely. Why is it advice there, Greg? Why is it advice? And we just greatly appreciate you taking the time to talk with Jess and I and talk to the listeners out there. It's been very insightful. And hopefully maybe we can have you back on another time in another season. Hope you have a great rest of your football season. And then I know once you get that wrapped up, you'll be transitioning to basketball. But again, just appreciate you having you on the show this week.
Yes, sir. If I can ever do anything to help you guys, or anybody has any questions, Jess knows how to get a hold of me. I'd be happy to do that.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. Fans, stay right with us. We'll have outlook for Pickens' game against Dawson this Friday on the other side of this break.
Pueblo Cantina is Jasper's best Mexican restaurant. Local folks know they use only fresh ingredients and serve a wide variety of freshly made dishes. Restaurants come and go, but Pueblo Cantina has been open since 1997. Lunch or dinner, 7 days a week. Come to Jasper's best Mexican restaurant, Pueblo Cantina, 25 Luke Carver Drive at 53 and 515 Jasper. Go Dragons!
In sports, every point counts, and at Alpha Insurance, they know when it comes to your budget, every dollar counts. That's why they work hard to get you the lowest rates and best discounts available. Plus, every Alpha policy comes with personal service from their hometown team. Call Alpha to start saving today. In Jasper, call Alpha agent Bill Lawrence at 706-692-2436 or stop by their office at 744 Noah Drive. Score savings with Alpha Insurance.
J.L. Weaver Law Firm of Jasper is proud to be part of the Pickens County community. They're behind the Dragons all the way and want to congratulate all the players, cheerleaders, and band members who've put in countless hours of work for this season. The J.L. Weaver Law Firm specializes in criminal defense, DUI, personal injury, and family law. 57 Southeast Street, Jasper. Call 706-253-1001. J.L. Weaver Law Firm.
Welcome back to Dragon Football Weekly. Really great interview there with Greg Norton. Hope you enjoyed listening to that and getting some insight like Jess and I did from the officiating side. We thought it'd be a neat perspective to bring to everybody and answer a few questions that we had, as and maybe some of you out there. So we're always trying to keep the coverage of Pickens football as fresh and relevant as possible, but appreciate him coming on. Now, shifting focus a little more to the action side, so to speak, of Friday Night Lights. This Friday coming up around the region, got a few contests to keep an eye on. 1-1 Gilmer travels to Dahlonega to take on 2-0 Lumpkin County. We got 1-0 White County traveling over to Wesleyan. Wesleyan's at 1-1. I think that probably, to me, will be the game of the week to watch, White County and at Wesleyan. I'm interested to see how that pans out. West Hall gets the bye week this Friday night, and of course our Dragons are in action back at home against the Dawson Tigers, our neighbors to the east. Dawson sits at 1-1 on the region, and Pickens 0-1. We really need to get things turned around, in my opinion, and might have an opportunity Friday night. Dawson's down a little from what we've gathered. What kind of insights do you have on the Tigers, Jess?
Yeah, first of all, I do think that White-Wesleyan matchup you mentioned is a biggie. I think it'll be a lot in terms of seeding. I think those are both playoff teams, but that might determine who gets a home playoff game and who does not in the first round. So something to keep an eye on there. But back to the main subject of this show, the Dragons facing Dawson at home. I do think you're correct in saying that this is an opportunity for a win. Now, the Massey spread that we use does have Dawson favored. We'll get in more of that in the Northside pregame show on Friday. They do have Dawson favored, but those rankings are based heavily on program history, not current events, not what's going on now. They're based on what happened yesterday, not today. And Dawson has a very strong recent program history, very, very strong. Eight straight playoff appearances, all under Coach Sid Maxwell, great coach, but they do appear to be on a little bit of a decline this year, 1-5 overall. They have picked up their only win versus West Hall, who, as we know, is on the weaker side of the region. Now, they do play a very strong non-region schedule, but last year they were able to pick up two wins in that non-region schedule, where this year they weren't able to pick up any. I do think it's a big opportunity for Pickens, and I don't think it's a must win, but I think it's very close. I think that we must win one of these next two games, either this Friday versus Dawson or next Friday at Gilmer. I think one of those two is definitely a must win. It would be great to win both of them. I think that the opportunity is going to be on the table with a Dawson team that's somewhat on the decline.
We know that last year Dawson was the region champ, and they beat Pickens pretty handily over in Dawsonville. 27-0 was that final score last year. Do we know anything about the personnel for Dawson here quickly, Jess?
Well, like some of these other teams, they are returning starting quarterback Davis Glass. They are a little bit more of a ground team than they are aired out. Kind of an old school style. Not quite as old school as we're going to see from Gilmer with the triple option, the wing tee, but they do not as progressive style offense, but it's kind of a blend between new age and old. So they do have returning starter Davis Glass at quarterback, but on defense they lost a lot of starters. This is just insight that I've kind of gathered from some folks that I know at Dawson. Graduated a lot of starters. They were very strong on the defensive side of the ball this year, and so that's kind of having a huge impact, and this year may be one of the key factors to their decline so far.
We'll unpack all that and more Friday night on the Northside pregame show starting at 7 p.m. and then of course kickoff between these region opponents at 7:30. We'll have coverage for you, as always, on 93.7 and 98.1 FM, as well as streaming online. Appreciate you tuning in to this week's episode of Dragon Football Weekly. We appreciate your support as we bring you coverage of Pickens football. I want to give a shout-out to our sponsors. We would not be able to bring you the coverage without them. We hope you'll support those local businesses. And we look forward to a very competitive matchup Friday night. Dawson Tigers traveling to Jasper, take on the Pickens Dragons in region matchup. Be with us. Tune in Friday night. Again, Northside pregame show at 7, kickoff 7:30. We'll see you then.